Welcome to the Undefined Podcast. I'm Jared Palmer.
And I'm Ken Wheeler. And today we have a super duper special guest, none other than DJ Fresh. What's up, dog?
Yo.
How's it going, man?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Yeah, this is probably the first time that I've done a podcast, actually, which is it's quite weird, like sort of sitting drinking with you guys, like in different places remotely around the world.
Where in the world are you?
So I'm in Oxford at the moment in the UK.
Oxfordshire.
Where are you guys at?
Hampton. Well, I'm in New Jersey.
I'm in NYC.
Okay, so that's why you guys were trying to organize doing the podcast at 1 a.m. in the morning UK time. It wasn't just because you guys like staying up.
We're not night owls.
Actually, Ken and I record the podcast at night in our underwear. Just
like, we do.
Kinda.
Well, that was nearly what I had to do. And then after some messing around, we finally managed to find a time that was sort of palatable to everyone. But I don't know why you guys are drinking, because isn't it like 4 p.m. over there?
It's 5:30. It's 5:00. It's past 5:00.
This is a late start for me.
It's a Friday too, right? It's Friday.
Yeah, it's Friday.
Let's do a little drink check here, folks. Ken, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a spiked seltzer. This is a Smirnoff Pina Colada seltzer. The White Claw was all sold out, so I'm drinking Smirnoff like a fucking plebe. Bah. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, I went bougie today. Back to the La Crema Chardonnay 2017 Monterey.
Very fancy. Look at you.
Look at me. And what about you, Dan? What are you drinking?
So I'm drinking Havana Club, Anejo Especial, El Ron de Cuba. That's not a very good Spanish or South American accent, but so I'm basically drinking rum.
Nice.
I should have just said rum probably, but yeah.
No, Havana's good, dude. That's the good stuff.
Yeah. I should have hard alcohol.
Yeah.
But I drank it all. I drank three bottles of whiskey this week.
It's not healthy, Ken.
No, it's not.
So Dan, you were, tell us about your origin story and how you got into development, because it's pretty interesting. We met at React Europe and I saw your awesome talk, but for those who weren't there, tell us this story of how you went from world-renowned DJ to developer.
Okay, so I mean, I've been programming since I was like tiny, and we're talking, because I'm actually quite old. I don't know if you could see that over the video, but I'm like, well, how old are you guys, actually?
I too am old.
Yeah, I think we might actually be the same kind of age. So I'm 42.
I'm 34. Jared's
just been really quiet over there, like he's got something to hide.
He's still in his 20s. What are you, like 28 years old?
28.
Jesus Christ. I mean, obviously, man. I didn't think you were 40, man. You know, like, you don't look 40. Let's move on. So I've been programming since, you know, like, I guess the very late 80s. My dad had like an Atari 800, and he didn't really use it. So he brought this thing, and he had like Pong and some F1 game. I remember the F1 game because I remember the way that the engine noise used to be like this sort of like, what do they call it? You know, just like super low resolution, like sound that would just like creep up and like a saw wave, and then like keep creeping up like in octaves. And so he had like a basic cartridge, and I plugged this thing in one day and started messing around with it and managed to start writing programs. And I was always super interested in programming. And then I went to university, and my parents at the time were not that keen on me doing programming, anything to do with programming as a job, because this is like the 90s, right? Like, I don't know if you got anyone is old enough to remember this period with computers, but like, I remember going around to my friend's house and him showing me on the screen a picture. It was like the most incredible thing that I'd ever fucking seen. It was like some super low res, like image that he'd, I don't know if he had some sort of really early scanner or something, but way back. And then, so my parents weren't really into me doing anything to do with computers. And to kind of like meet somewhere in the middle, I went to Kingston University and I did a business information technology degree. And it was like, my dad wanted me to do business And I was like, you know, I slipped the IT in there. Everyone's happy. So I jumped in, I went and did that. And round about maybe a couple of years before that, a couple of my friends were like into hacking games and stuff like that. We used to do this crazy thing. We used to like, do you guys remember like boxing where you used to like connect to like an operator, like in a different country, like over the phone
line?
Like
freaking. Yeah, I used to do all that shit. Phone freaking.
So he was like, he was like sort of like introducing me to that world. And the thing that was really interesting to me at the time were the chiptune tunes they used to have on like the hacked games. You guys remember those old school like chiptune?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Songs. And I was just like, this is like the coolest thing I've ever heard. And probably because at the time, even just making music on your own was not really a reality. And especially not, you know, if you had like access to studios and at the time what was really expensive equipment, it was very alien, the idea of being able to like create something that sounded like a complex piece of music, you know, completely on your own. And when I heard this chiptune music, it just sounded like the beginning of something really exciting. And then not long after that, I heard like acid house and hardcore and early jungle music. And there was this whole big like cultural movement happening in the UK at the time, the Criminal Justice Bill, where effectively the government passed a law that you weren't allowed to have parties out on the street with more than like 10 or 15 people. Up until this point, you could just turn up and just have like an enormous party with like thousands of people. And that's what people were doing. So people would, you'd like go onto pirate radio and there would be like an illegal party happening at an aircraft hangar somewhere, and you'd have to tune into the radio and they'd be like, okay, everybody's meeting at like junction 14 of the M3 or whatever. And then like wait for a message, and there'd be like hundreds of cars or even thousands of cars by a gas station or something, waiting for someone to announce where the party was. Everybody would descend on this spot, and because everybody got there at the same time, it was too hard for the police to break it up. So there was all this whole thing going on, and like the birth of MDMA, which at the time was like, you know, now it's kind of, obviously it's not like there's nothing positive about MDMA anymore at this point. But at that point, it was like, oh my God, it's this new drug that makes everybody love each other and the world's going to be a better place. And, you know, so it was just like, I think it was a really crazy time, like culturally in the UK. And then I realized that I could use the same tools that you could use to make these chip tunes, Octomed on the Amiga, to write actual like electronic dance music. So I was at uni, I bumped into some guys who were on a local pirate radio station. And I went down to like be on their show one night. So the guys would like get an aerial and they would climb up like a council estate tower and put the aerial on top. And there'd be people watching at the top of the tower in case the police came. Imagine being like 18 years old and being like wrapped up in that shit. It was just like crazy.
But by aerial, you mean an antenna?
Yeah. So like an antenna.
A radio antenna.
Like, well, I guess it was FM, right? Yeah. Because they were broadcasting. You could tune into it. There were like famous pirate radio stations at the time. There was like one called Rude FM and Cool FM. And it was kind of like the thing, if you could get onto the pirate radio stations. So yeah, so I just kind of got caught up in this whole thing. And then people were saying to me, I was making music and people were like, you know, your music's really good. You should do something with it. And I didn't really think it was good enough. I always felt like it just wasn't quite ready yet. So one day, a friend of mine who now manages Jonas Blue, who's quite big in Europe, it's like a big house DJ. So we were both on pirate radio together, and he took one of my tracks to a small underground record label. And the guy from the label called Renegade Harbor, they called me up and said like, yeah, you know, want to release some of your tracks. And it was kind of crazy. And just sort of started off on this path, you know, towards music. And then at the same time was always doing sort of techie things in the background. So I had like a website called Dogs on Acid, which was the biggest music forum in the world at one point. Dogs on Acid. Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
But you know, this is like back in 2002 or 2003. And at that point it was like, people literally did not give a fuck about the internet at that point. Do you know what I mean? Like I could say to somebody, we have the biggest something on the internet. People would just be like, what the fuck is the internet? Sorry for swearing. I don't know if I'm swearing too much.
You're allowed to swear.
No. We swear quite a bit here.
Swear, yeah.
Okay, good. All right, cool. So
keep it.
2 points for every fuck. 2 points for every fuck.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, I must be up to at least 200 points.
Ken will probably beat you by the end of the episode.
I have the high score.
Yeah.
All right, let's see if we can, let's see who wins in this episode.
Let's see who fucking wins.
So where was I? So I was doing things like that. I started a startup with a guy called Chris McNabb, who's a security analyst. He's written a bunch of books on O'Reilly, have released a bunch of his books. And a guy called Chris Parry, who started XFM, which is a big radio show in the UK. And at one point we had a company, we had like, I think maybe 15 or 20 developers in Poland, South America. And we were developing the only technology at the time to stop people from sharing music on the peer-to-peer networks. So that was like, you know, as a board member and a founder. But really the last time that I looked at code was probably, I went through a phase where I started learning C. For some reason I was learning C. I think it was because I was trying to build our website and then I was like, I need to learn JavaScript, and JavaScript's a subset of C, and I might as well just learn C. And I started learning C and I was like, what the fuck is the point of this? I can't do anything with this. You know what I mean? It's like I started off like learning something useful, like learning HTML and what, like super early HTML and CSS. And then I was like writing C that I could do absolutely nothing with. So, and I had music going on at the time. So I put that down again. And then I feel like I've been talking for about 9 hours.
No, you're good.
No,
keep going. This is fascinating shit.
Dude, what year are we in right now? We were learning C, or you put down C. What year is that?
I thought you were saying, what year are we in? Like,
No.
Right now?
No.
I was so engrossed in it that I'd forgotten.
No, we're wrapped up. We're wrapped up in your story. So what year is this when you learned C and like...
C was probably 2002, 2003. So this was kind of around the time that I started my forum.
Okay.
Did you ever try to build plugins with C?
No, I never did anything particularly crazy. I was just kind of learning programming again. I'd only really sort of learned basic languages up to that point. And it was just something I was doing in my free time. So I made like I started writing a very simple game. I think I was writing like chess or checkers or something like that.
I have to know, did you ever write Visual Basic?
No, I never did. I never did. I'm not part of that club.
Fuck.
I know it's like so many people that have a history of writing.
Good times. It's a thread on our podcast origin stories. It seems like a lot of people are coming through Visual Basic, but that's mostly front end. And so you're on a different path though. So 2002, take us through the next decade.
So
EDM explodes.
So EDM explodes. I started a label with a guy called Adam F, called Breakbeat Chaos. We signed, I don't know if you guys have heard of Pendulum. Does that ring a bell?
Yep.
Yeah.
So we brought Pendulum over from Australia. It was kind of crazy. I was living in this flat in Hampstead and it was just kind of turning into this like epicenter of drum and bass, and people were just like, would just turn up in the middle of the fucking night. And it was just like, shit was just 24/7, like round the clock.
Right.
And yeah, it was pretty crazy. So Pendulum came and moved into my house, and then we had a lot of success with the label. We signed a bunch of other people that went on to be quite successful, like Sigma and Chase and Status and Nero.
Nero?
Dude, Nero.
Yeah, wow. you know Nero? Yeah.
And Chase and Status.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So this, you know, before they kind of blew up, so we did some of their early stuff. But we were having a lot of success with that, and I was kind of like sinking back into into sort of like a running a record label mode and trying to help, you know, younger people like get moving and try and pass on what I'd learned to those guys. And then I've had a whole bunch of like legal bullshit that I can't go into that pretty much completely put me off running record labels. And then decided to focus on just making my own music again. And then well, I had a track called Gold Dust. That was the first kind of big UK thing.
Fucking fire.
Oh, you know the track. You probably know the Flux Pavilion version though, but
I know both.
Flux Pavilion. Because everybody in America is like, yeah, I know Gold Dust. Yeah, that Flux Pavilion song. And I'm like, do you not know my version? It's like the original version. And people are like, no, but I love the fucking Flux Pavilion song. It's fucking awesome, man.
It's like, incredible.
Yeah. The parallels.
So then I had Louder, which was the UK's first number one dubstep record in the UK. And then Hot Right Now is the first drum and bass number one in the UK. And then 10 other top 10 UK singles, but they were all different styles of music like Moon Baton. And
I fucking love Moon Baton so much.
So good.
Yeah, it's fun, man. And I remember like Flux Pavilion being very new. So I gave him that Gold Dust remix. At that point, I'd heard his early stuff and I was just totally blown away by it. I thought he was fucking amazing. But, you know, before that, a lot of the original early dubstep was very minimal, very stripped back, quite tribal. And I didn't really get it at first, to be honest. I was kind of like, what the... there was so much hype about it, you know?
I think Roscoe was the first one I heard over here.
Yeah, Roscoe's sick. So I went down that rabbit hole, but round about this time, just as I'd made Gold Dust, I kind of been planning on focusing back on tech again. And it was really weird. So I was ill, I was in hospital, I had a tumor, and Gold Dust hit the radio whilst I was in hospital and just everything changed, you know, overnight. And it was like all of a sudden I was being asked to play like main stage at these massive festivals and do all this crazy shit. And it was like, you know, I was getting all kinds of crazy people like calling up my manager saying, you know, does he want to work with this person and that person? So it was kind of like, you know, all my dreams were coming true, but I'd already kind of decided that I didn't really want to continue on that path because I was missing the sort of tech side really. So then a few years later I had like cancer, which I recovered from. And I just had this like moment of crystal clarity because there was a period where there was a chance that I was going to die. And fuck. It just dawned on me. Yeah. Heavy shit. I'm going to top up my glass at this point. So
that is heavy.
That's pretty heavy.
Yeah. So I don't know. And I just kind of realized that, you know, it's really easy when you're on a path, any path, you know, towards something that you think that you should be doing. It doesn't even have to be something that you want to be doing, whether it's a career, whether it's like a relationship, any path that you've invested into. It's very hard to step off it when it's straight in front of you and it feels solid, but I just didn't really feel happy. And then when I had this moment where I thought I was going to die, it was like I had to come to terms with that. And afterwards I thought, you know, if I can come to terms with the idea of dying, then I need to fucking think about what I actually want to do with my life and stop like worrying about what my manager wants me to do and my record labels want me to do and just do what I fucking want to do. And it's such a weird thing because like music is, you know, to have that success and don't get me wrong, I'm so, so thankful for all of the support I've had and the opportunities that I've had, but to have that success and to turn it down and go off in another direction is something that most people would just think is completely fucking crazy.
So you mean to tell me that this entire time you've loved tech, but you just got into music and always wanted to do tech? on the side.
Yeah, basically.
Y'all should switch fucking lives.
I know exactly. I know exactly how you feel.
That's why I sent you that message the other day, man. You're like on the other side. You know what I mean?
All Ken wants to do is make beats.
Can I make beats? Nah, I always wanted to be a rapper. Like, that's it. But you know, just ended up in tech.
Can you drop some bars for us right now? Can we just?
Oh man!
Come on, man.
I wish I could. If I could beatbox, I'd do a little, you know, but I can't.
I don't know. I was rapping something the other day. What did I say? I drink all night and I type all day, but that's all right. That's life, okay? But I'm gonna get paid in the ripe old age, and his beats got me feeling some type of way or some shit like that.
There it is. Come on.
Yeah, what did I say? I said, I started talking about fucking, and then I was like, Boston looked like the White Claw wave. I was like, watercolor shit, just like Monet. it was fucking sick. Yeah, it was good.
You guys like to have fun. Switch like fucking Freaky Friday.
You seen style. That Chris Brown video? Yeah, it's like you just got to go to the
things. I was kind of like the guy. So anyone that, you know, if you guys had met me during that period, anyone that worked with me was always freaked out by the fact that I was more interested in whatever the latest like software update was for the DAW that I was using, or plugins, or taking samplers apart, or, you know, people would be in the studio with me and be like, can we like make some music? And I'd be like, yeah, but you don't understand, like this new fucking synthesizer is got so much fucking FM potential.
Do you think that made you better though? Do you think that made you better though, because you were so into your tools?
I mean, I think you know, like drum and bass and even dubstep and that whole period was like, it came at a funny time for me, and you know, it was like the mix of technology and music, and it was so exciting at that point in time. Right. Like for me right now, it doesn't feel that way. It, you know, like Spotify's releasing, I think I read yesterday, it's 12,000 songs, might even be more than that.
Jeez.
It might even be 20,000 songs every fucking day.
Jesus Christ.
Fucking day. It's not over, because record labels can still make money out of it, but I just think it's changed a lot. And
Sure.
I'm kind of a child.
Oh, has it changed?
That tape age, man. I came from like tapes and vinyl. Do you know what I mean?
When did you stop using hardware and start using software?
When did I go in
the box? When did you go to like soft synths, right?
When did I go in the box, as we call it?
Yeah.
So I was actually probably the first person in drum and bass to go that route, the first person to start going that route, but the person who was the first person to go that route 100% with no hardware was Rob from Pendulum Knife Party. And I remember working closely with him, and he was just, he had synthesis on rap. Like he could literally, you know, I had friends, people that I was working with at the time, and we would like sample records. We'd use synthesis as well, but mostly with samplers, you know, like using LFOs on filters over samples and layering things and shit like that. And Rob could literally make any sound completely from scratch. And at the time that was just like, what the fuck is going on? Like for me, it was like, I literally was like, I need to fucking just stop for a minute and figure this thing out, because this is like a shit has just spun out of control. It was crazy. And I remember like going to studio with him, and there was a bass sound that everyone was using, that everyone used to sample off this one record. And Rob had remade the bass sound, this kind of like whoop, whoop kind of sound. But, you know, because he like resynthesized it, he'd set up all these controllers so he could like, he'd be like going whoop, whoop, and then he'd be like, do like some crazy, like screaming fucking thing. And I was just like, dude, I need to like get back on my game.
Becomes pretty clear whenever you listen to Knife Party.
Dude, Knife Party is crazy. Yeah.
He's got pretty granular control over the noises.
He's a fucking scientist, you know, it's like that simple. And Rob, like me, I think is also more into the tech, really. I mean, he loves music as well, but I saw him like a few months ago. He was showing me a program that he had on the App Store that would basically like let you pick any, he had like maybe 200 pairs of headphones that he'd done some kind of spectrum analysis with, so that you could like run his app and it would EQ your headphones to give you a flat frequency response.
What?
Yeah. And he's just like, we're in his studio and, you know, I'm catching up. I haven't seen him for a while. And he's like, yeah, man, you know, yeah, I made this app as well. Just, he's like telling me what he's been doing. He's like, yeah, you know, and I also made this app. And I'm like, what do you mean you just like made this app? Like, that's you know, sick. Whilst being Knife Party at the peak of their success. So yeah, no, he's
fucking made this app.
He's a genius.
That's hilarious.
So how did you make your evolution to your current self? And when did that happen?
So, I mean, I guess, I've always been interested in machine learning, and I think just in trying to sort of like synthesize human behavior with computers, that's always been something that has really interested me since I was tiny, you know. And I remember like thinking about the process of evolution and wondering how you could synthesize that in a computer. And so I guess what happened was that I'd started a production company. I'd stopped DJing because of my health stuff, and I'd had cancer and lost my thyroid and my parathyroid. And I have to take medication every day. And if I left the medication at home, I could end up in hospital within like 6 or 7 hours or something like that. Shit. So it just wasn't really a reality for me to be touring around the world anymore, because that shit happens. I mean, you guys know with conferences, it's like you have a late night, you're rushing to the airport, you leave your laptop at night.
Shit happens.
Passport, you know. And yeah, I just couldn't do that. So it kind of pushed me. And the first thing I thought was, okay, well, I'll do a production company because that makes sense. I can sit in the studio, produce for people. So I produced a bunch of stuff. I did like Kylie Minogue's last record, and I did some bits and pieces, some EDM stuff, some shit for Japan, blah, blah. And I just realized that I didn't want to be a fucking producer. I just didn't enjoy it. I really didn't enjoy that. For me, it was like, I like making music because it felt creative. It felt pioneering. Like you could come up with the next sound, and production for other people is about making it's work. So what happened was, to try and cut this ridiculously long story a little bit shorter, what I realized all of a sudden was that I hadn't been watching Spotify, and I didn't really understand how to maximize my profile on Spotify. So I decided to stop producing for a minute and just have a look at that. So the next thing that I knew, I was on the Spotify API, and the next thing that I knew, I was like trying to, you know, like make calls to like the Spotify API, and and it's just
and then you went down the rabbit hole. Yeah. And then you went down the rabbit hole. I feel like that's actually like a lot. I mean, Ken, you and I are both self-taught, and we've talked about this a little bit. That's how it starts, right? You have an idea, you have a thing you want to do, and you just start Googling, and it's just,
you have an idea or a problem, and it's like, it doesn't matter like all like the minutia in between or around it.
No, you have a goal, you go execute against it.
Just A to B that shit and make it happen. And then you're like, oh shit. Like, which that's what I did with that auto tune in the browser. Like, I don't know fucking C++, and I barely know fucking anything about WASM, but it's something that I wanted.
But you'll hack it until it works.
Yeah. With enough fucking determination or persistence, fucking.
And you may not even understand it the first 5 times you do it, right? That's the other thing that, like, is it's all smoke and mirrors.
But it'll work.
But it'll work, exactly. I think it's interesting.
Bloody mindedness.
Yeah. So you're doing front end now, right?
So I was working for a company called HT2 Labs doing machine learning. I built them a platform for training TensorFlow models and deploying
NBD.
TensorFlow models.
Shit.
No big deal.
What else did I do? And bits and bobs, like, you know, bits of time series stuff. Mostly like NLP classification kind of stuff, but in a full stack way. So like I built like a You know, it's like nodes. It was all, this was like TensorFlow.js actually. So TensorFlow.js, oh, nodes, React in the front end.
TensorFlow.js has like come a long way.
Yeah, it's really cool, man. So I actually had to write all the pre-processing code because this was like 2 months after it came out. So I had to write all the pre-processing code from scratch, and which was pretty ugly. And I've actually moved away from that now. So I'm trying to use the typical Python and, you know, a little bit of R now and then, that kind of thing.
R, bold.
Yeah. I just kind of feel like that's where the most cutting edge algorithms tend to surface first.
Yeah. All that data science shit is in R and Python.
Yeah. We used R back in, even in my Cornell days, we used R.
So yeah. So then I started moving in that direction. But yeah, I don't know if you guys know Shang-Hing Kai. He's like one of the lead TensorFlow.js developers, but
we got to get him on the podcast.
He's fucking awesome, man. He's incredible. And he was showing me like all of the libraries now that are available for JS that you know, make like doing machine learning in JS like actually realistic without having to build all this low level tooling to get it to work. You know, for NLP, for the pre-processing stuff. But yeah, so kind of full stack at the moment. I'm working for a company called GLG, Gerson Lehrman Group, as a principal engineer, which
wow.
is
nice.
Like principal EDM engineer.
That's fucking awesome.
Do you have to like DJ the company party?
You know what is so funny? Because the last company, I was like waiting for them to ask me, like waiting angrily for them to ask me, and they never asked me.
That's fucking assholes. What?
No, but I was like really happy because imagine how you'd feel, right? Someone's giving you a job, like knowing that you're like from that background.
Right.
And then they ask you to DJ at that. But you'd just be like, dude, I thought you believed in me. Like, and all this time, you just wanted me to DJ at your Christmas party.
That's pretty funny.
So, yeah, I was glad that that didn't happen.
Well, if I get signed to Dr. Dre and he asks me to make his website, I'm not going to ask any questions.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't say that on air if I was you. Next thing you know, you're going to be making
next thing
your next website.
I'm like, and you'll fucking be like, Beats you'll be by like, Dre. Fuck.
When am I going to get in the fucking studio? He'll be like, just get that fucking drop down working, Ken. Okay.
Sort it out, please. Like, all right, man. Fuck. So TensorFlow.js, dude, that runs on the GPU and shit, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're using it in the browser, then in theory, that's what you'd be using. But I've been running it on Node, so I've been running it in the back end. And I think like I think running TensorFlow in the browser is really exciting, mostly because of data anonymization. You know, the fact that you can like train models in the browser or like on mobile or in the browser. And abstract, like keep the data layer, like the sensor data or whatever, like on the client, so it's not actually going anywhere. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
It's not getting sent out.
Promising thing. Yeah, I think that's super exciting.
Now, on the Node side, does that do that with like C bindings, or does it actually do it in Node?
So Node's it's CUDA, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it binds to C. Yeah.
So it's got to be in C. As I say, it probably doesn't do it in real Node. Yeah.
Yeah.
I finally wrote one of those the other day.
Did you really, Ken?
Yeah.
I've never written one. Tell me how does it even what do you even do? How does it even work?
It's pretty straightforward. It was nothing too hard. It was like we had to sort something, right? And the sort was based upon this like internal qualifier, right? It was like this internal thing that has something to do with the trading family name of the thing, right? Okay. So like it wasn't the sort of thing that you could replicate in JavaScript very easily.
Okay.
So we just made it callable from Node so that I could use it as part of a sort.
Okay.
You were calling C from Node.
Yeah. So we had it there. So it was like I needed to run a list of names of things through this to get a very special sort order.
Sounds like it must have been pretty fucking special, man. If you had to,
I'm telling you, man, it was that like I'm sitting there and I was trying to sort this thing for like 3 weeks, and I was like, oh my God. I was like, it's not alphabetical, it's not lexicographical. I'm like, there is no rhyme or reason to how this sorts. So then we actually get the original source, and it turns out they have this very special sort thing. And the order of these things is very important for layout. Like, it's like,
it's important. It's special.
It was special. So, you know, it was special enough to
definitely not sharp ratios or anything like that.
No. But yeah, that's what my day is looking like. That sort of thing. I was telling you before, I did the text selection thing.
Yeah.
Devastating.
So what about your music and tech stuff, Ken? Like, where is that going? How come you're not interested in doing things like writing, you know, like a DAW or plugins and that kind of shit?
I am. It's just, I don't think it's been there just yet. But it's definitely getting there, right? Like, since I started playing with Audio Worklet, I definitely think we're getting... I mean, the web audio has been traditionally pretty janky. You could do some fun stuff with it. Like
fucking wax sauce.
Yeah, like, as far as, like, actually, like, combining programming and my actual music, and I mean, outside of, like, some Max MSP, like, I really haven't done much of that. But, like, as far as, like, playing, I've done, like, a ton of that. Like, I've done, like, all this shit in the browser, trying to make, like, you know, FL Studio in the browser kind of thing. And, you know, you just, up until now, you didn't really have threading. You didn't have like the off thread processing that you get with Audio Worklet. But now I think it's becoming more of a possibility. So you might see something in the near future.
Are we going to see a Figma for audio, like production and sound production in the browser soon?
I'd like to.
Yeah. I mean, there is stuff like that out there. I've seen... Like, I'm sure there's like a browser door. Yeah.
There are some things like that DJ thing that you showed me that was crazy.
Yeah, that's fucking crazy, man.
It's like Traktor in the browser.
Oh, Traktor in the browser. Yeah, Traktor's pretty cool.
U.DJ. It's like, if anybody's listening and is interested in DJing, you should check that out. It's amazing. It's just, I think he's using WASM. But I've never seen anything like it. It's literally like Traktor in the browser.
In the browser.
All the effects and all the beat, you know, like that you can like they have those crazy like beat effects where you can like, you know, mix in the effect, and it even has like videos. So what? Like whilst you're mixing, you press a button and this video like comes up and it's like transparent, like, you know, over the top of the mixer. There's like people dancing and it's fucking crazy. Yeah,
that shit is crazy. That's, you know, weird. I'm probably going to try and build the FL Studio in the browser, for London.
Cool. For London, cool. for your talk. Yeah. We're both speaking at React Advanced.
Is that in London?
It's in London on October 23rd and 4th.
Mm-hmm. So you might have to come down and have a beverage.
You're going to have a beverage. Yeah, an adult frosty beverage.
Yeah. No, that'd be great. That'd be great, man. Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
Ken's the keynote. No pressure.
No pressure whatsoever.
I don't know what I'm going to talk about.
Can you just quickly talk about Ken's new problem with haters? And like,
man,
like talking about music at tech conferences and where that's going.
Oh, yo, dude, what the fuck was that? What the fuck, dude? Your YouTube comments, dude. First of all, my YouTube comments are like, good talk.
I know. Like, why do people hate me that
much? I actually think it's like, it's a kind of cool though. Like, you have people who are so animate and passionate about your talk, and they give a fuck. They don't even give a fuck about my talks.
You gotta explain what happened for anyone who's listening.
All right, yeah. We gotta get the backstory.
Okay, so I give this talk, right? And I think it had like a music demo at the end, but the music demo was largely a hooks demo, realistically. But in the beginning, like I said, like, hey, I have this album out, for like literally one slide. I was like, hey, I have this album, it's pretty good, you should check it out. All right, and then I proceed for the next 45 minutes to step through source code on screen about the new features in React. And then at the end, right, like I had like a demo of like, you know, like a drum machine that I made with hooks, right? And I spend like 10, 15 minutes like going through the source of this thing, and then like 3 minutes of just
not even.
If 3 minutes, right?
If 3 minutes.
So then I get this comment on the YouTube video, or what did they say? They were like, they were like, it was an okay talk, but I wish you would fucking not sit here and try and produce or promote his music career the whole fucking time. And I'm like, what?
You're like, what? Haters? When did this start happening?
It's like, I just gave like a 45-minute technical talk.
Like Code is being the new rock stars, right? This is the other side of that. Now you guys are going to get to experience what we in the music industry have been putting up with for fucking years.
Just haters. A bunch of shit-talking haters, man. But like, then you see some of the other ones. Like, do you see that one where like, did they do the circle game in England?
The circle guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. Some dude just didn't get it. It's hilarious.
Yeah. So like, since I was like a young boy, we had this game, right? Where if you take your hand like this, right?
Yeah.
And if it's below the belt, right?
And out of the eyesight, out of like line of sight.
And you get someone to look at it, then you get to punch them.
Yeah.
It's called the circle game.
Yeah.
So you'd be like, hey, check out this thing over here, right? And they'd look, and then you'd be like, got you, motherfucker. And they'd be like, oh.
Right. Yeah. No,
yeah. So it's called the circle game, right? So I thought it would be funny, right? If I put like a leg with the circle game as a slide in my talk, right? And I was like, ha, I get to punch all 500 of you after this thing. Like, I was just like, yeah, you fucking looked.
Is that what you did?
Yeah. Yeah, and then like apparently, right? Like I guess in like the last like 3 or 4 months, like 4chan co-opted that hand gesture
as some kind of
fucking white supremacist dog whistle or some shit.
Everything. Oh,
no. So like
you
this
always
person
always got to check your hand signals, man, before you do a hand signal in public. You got to make sure what are you representing with that?
Man, dude, these people lost their fucking. I mean, not these people. This one crazy motherfucker lost their fucking mind in this YouTube comment. You know, like, you know, it was like a 3-paragraph thing about, you know, supporting white supremacism and shit. Like I'm sitting there like giving a talk about fucking rap music and they're like, he's a white supremacist. I'm like,
dude, that reminds me of a thing. So you ever built like a country's input to select the country?
Yeah.
You know how it's like pretty annoying. You got to go look up like all the fucking names, all the flags, all the shit. Yeah. Like, so I made this package because I did all the research one time and I made this package that has like, country name, ISO 2 code, phone number format, like other abbreviations, etc. And I'm like, cool, this would be a great name. I'm going to call this Globalist. And I was like, oh, that's a pretty good name for a package, like a global list. Globalist, good name. So I tweeted out, and the first fucking comment is, Globalist is a word for nationalist. Nationalists and the right wing and the alt right use globalist as a term that you shouldn't call it globalist. So then I renamed it Country FNS. I was like,
wow,
fuck, really?
You know, one thing I have to bring up as someone who's been away from programming for quite a while, because like the whole open source thing, it was like I missed the beginning of that, right? So I've just come back and it's like everything's open source. And the one thing that I found weirdest about the open source thing is that the people who make all the shit that people use seem to just get given a really hard time.
It's fucking whack sauce, dude. It's so
that is a true story, my man.
Well articulated.
With that,
dude.
What do we do?
It's just like, well, because here's the deal: you basically in the before time, you just kind of kept the shit to yourself, and you were just like mad at like, oh, this fucking software doesn't work. Yeah. Now through GitHub, you have a place where you can vent your issues.
Like if somebody can't figure something out, like you know what the thing is? Like no one who's actually good at this usually gives you a hard time.
Yeah, it's people who really suck at it. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, well, you know, it's people who are all right at it. You know, like if somebody actually makes open source, right? 9 times out of 10, they're gonna leave a thoughtful response, right? But like these like middle of the road motherfuckers, right? They'll get like frustrated with something and like GitHub issues is their place to vent.
But I've seen people saying things like, you know, had I known that it didn't have XYZ in the first place, I would have never fucking used it. What the fuck? I built my whole project on it. It's like, dude, how much have you paid for this thing that you're like building your whole
company? That's the best response too.
I literally had that exact exchange.
Yeah.
I literally had, I was like, if you don't like it, I can give you your money back. And fucking got a bunch of thumbs up.
Yeah.
So yeah, dude, people fucking come right at you on there, man. It's fucking devastating.
Yeah, it's why it's hard.
Formic, you get a bunch of shit, huh?
Oh, dude, it's hard. It's hard now.
I nearly gave you some shit on Formic, actually. Here you go. Here you fucking go.
I'll tell you a funny story though, right? Like the higher brow of the library, the less shit you get. Right. So the more complex of a thing that you're doing, right? The less shit you get. The more accessible of a thing that you get. Like I built a fucking jQuery carousel.
Oh my god, right? Dude. Devastating.
And the fucking the issues on that are out of, because I mean you have people from all levels coming on there and people are like literally filing issues like this doesn't work.
Well, it's because when you Google carousel, it's the first carousel.
Yeah, it's the carousel. Fucked.
Yeah, I've heard about this. Fucked. What's this called again?
Slick.
This is like
Slick Carousel.
Slick Carousel.
It's like the OG original best carousel.
I don't know. It was like somewhere between 4 and 8 years ago, I built this. I was working in agencies, right? And like there was a carousel on every single website because we were building like fashion websites.
The good old days.
So, I was building them from scratch every single time, like literally building them from scratch. And then I was like, fuck it. I'm going to build one that works on all of them. And then I was like, you know what? This should probably be useful for other people. So I give it out there. And that was like, it was some of my best and worst decisions. Best because, you know, I guess it like put me on the map and shit and like really like moved career forward. But worst because like, you know, I probably have a drinking problem now because of that.
Dude, it's so bad with Formic right now. It's like,
I don't know if you could blame a drinking problem on that. Candy,
go, I mean, go to that repo.
Dude, it's so bad. It's so bad.
Go to that repo.
Dude, so what Slick has like 25,000, 26,000 stars.
Yeah.
So Formic just surpassed like 17,000 stars and we just got like their 250th issue. And the problem is that the level of bullshit issues to real issues is now off. It's just off the charts.
Do you ever think you'll get through them all?
No, I'm not even going to try. If I also, it's so
but
much.
Jared,
now,
it's very selfish of you not to pay somebody to go through those issues. Like really, you know, if you were going to live up to the promise, you would have hired people off out of your own pocket and you'd have them fixing those issues. Surely.
So the other thing too is that like that's a fucking hilarious. The other thing too is I don't really give a fuck about most of them. Like they don't really affect. We're at the point now, and it's really funny. We're at the point of stability now, where it's like most of the time the issues because of and this happens to be the way the form is designed. If you're having an issue, it's probably because you don't understand React, not because you don't really know how to use form.
Are you using it wrong?
Right. Or you're using it wrong, or you're like inventing shit, or you're like forcing it and bending it into what you think how you think it works.
That's got to be the most annoying answer when you leave an issue on someone's repo if they come back and say, yo, you just don't understand the language.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's why I don't even leave it. What I often do is just like, so how would you do this without Formic? And they'll be like, oh, that, I see your point. And then
we use Formic in our new React Native app that I'm working on in my free time.
I'm working on native support. It's not as good as it should be. We're gonna make it better soon.
When you're doing open source libraries, right? And I've seen a ton through as of you, Jared, right? But like, there becomes a point when it feels done, right? It feels good and done, right? And then like, you know, you're happy to fix bugs, but like you can't fix everybody's issue, right? So there's people who have like these like fringe cases and, you know, you can either choose to, you know, like open up your API surface to support those,
which I refuse
fringe cases. Yeah. Or you can say like, hey, let's keep it tight. And almost I've caved a lot of times. And then, you know,
every time you cave,
learning, every time you cave, your shit gets shitty.
Your shit gets in. So then you get, honest to God, one of the things I think is a feature, not a bug, is that Formic only solves for about 85 to 90% of use cases. The fact that I've been so fucking no first is actually a feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
Because it keeps you from doing dumb shit.
And when you don't solve their particular
Oh, they hate you though. Special, they hate you though.
That is when you get the worst. That's when people completely lose their fucking mind.
Think about like that extra 15%, the amount of code that has to then be maintained and updated and all the rest of it in order to
In Formic 3, I'm ripping out code. I'm removing features in Formic 3 because I'm getting to more of what I believe is like the purest model of forms, which I didn't see at first in version 1 and 2. But now I have like a clear cut thing and we're going to be removing features that are just like above and beyond and getting more Unix like in its like single purpose, single responsibility principle. Yeah. And obviously like Formic's goal is to be backwards compatible. Cause like, I'm not fucking rewriting anything, never doing that. But like, yeah, dude, the default should be no.
Yeah, it really, really should. You know, but it's hard to do, like, especially if it's like your first project and it's popular.
Yeah. Right.
Like you want to solve everything just to, like, you know, okay, oh wow, I'm getting users. I'm, you know, there's people who want to use this. So okay, I'll take care of it for you. But that's a really easy way to destroy a library.
And you know the libraries that have been destroyed, like, and you, oh, yeah, it's because they have 700 props.
We don't have to name names.
We don't have to drop names here, but they
we don't have
to
name names.
No, which you know these libraries. These are the libraries where there's no intuitive part of the API, right? You have to go to the docs every time. You never quite learn it, right? You have to go back every time. And when you install it on a new project, you realize that it doesn't work the same way.
Oh, it does that now?
Right. And they changed that. And to me, that's devastating to productivity. Devastating.
Yeah, it really is. When something is just simple, it's just fucking nice, man.
Things need to be symmetrical and intuitive and teach themselves to you. And if they don't do that, then your shit sucks.
It's like, you know, instead of adding a prop, just rely on the language, right? Create the right escape hatches and you're good to go.
And if it doesn't solve this one use case, it's okay. It's fine. Yeah.
Fork it. There's a fork button.
And yet, that's the other thing too. We talk about this. People are so afraid to fork.
I fork all the time. I'm going to fork tonight.
Dude, you know what I've been doing recently though? have you guys played with Patch Package?
No.
Oh my fucking God. There's this library called Patch Package. The way it works is you go into your node modules directory. You want to make a change. You're going to be like, I don't really want this to work this way. I want to make it work that way. You want to comment out a line. You want to do a little thing. You go into node modules. You make the changes. You run yarn patch package. And then it creates a diff and puts it into a patches folder. And then on post install, it implements the diff onto the outputted node module.
That's so fucking sick.
So you see, you can track and you commit the patch to Git. So you see the difference of what you're changing. And so it just runs as a post install. So it's
really
basically
so
instead of using like hacky, like string shit with like post install scripts, which I've done, you know, some hacky node module.
Monkey
patching bullshit. It's like you monkey patch, but it's like clean and it's committed to your source. So when we have like a great React app thing and we're like, oh, you know what? I want to be able to import shit from outside of the source directory.
You guys do you guys use MPX a lot?
Yeah, I love MPX.
MPX is pretty cool.
I keep hearing people talking about it, but I haven't really used it yet.
So it just will install the latest version of whatever your CLI tool is.
I forget to use it half the time.
Oh, dude, I've been pretty good at that.
I've been trying to remember it lately.
Because like in TSDX, my like TypeScript package thing.
Sick, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I recommended that to somebody at work the other day.
It's really good at its job. Doesn't do a lot. It just does what it does. And if you're starting a new TypeScript package, like I already did this. You don't need to think about it. It's done.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah. You don't have to go through all the bullshit.
Don't need to do the bullshit. VS Code, TypeScript, React.
I think it's a lot better when you have done it though, because then you kind of know what you're doing, right? For like a beginner, right? They might not you know, they might get lost with all that magic. But dude, like for me, like who has set it up, right? Like,
dude, I'm did like, you play oh, with error shit. Codes? You play with error codes? I just shipped this feature. Okay, so you know how React has error codes, right?
Yeah.
So you go into React and in production, they have this error thing. They like do this. So I ripped out React's error code module.
Oh, sick.
If you pass this certain flag to TSDX, it will traverse all of your invariants, rip them out into a JSON object, and then you can host your own like React-like error code thing on your...
Oh, you fancy.
Website. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, we out there.
And you got any open source, man?
Yeah, Dan, what's your open source moves?
You get some open source and side projects?
I kind of get the feeling that it's like... I mean, I'd be interested to see what you guys think about this, but I kind of get the feeling that you get people that are like open source guys and people that are like app guys, and I'm an app guy, and I don't know if it's just because I'm not
you're a dollar bills guy, and then there's open source guys.
yeah
or maybe I'm just fed up with haters at this point in my life, you know.
Well, you know,
I'm like, I just got away from that, you know. I don't want to go back into like haters on issues as well. Like I had haters on YouTube, haters on Twitter, haters on my own message board, and then I'm going to go for issues, no thank you. But in seriousness, like, to me, I think, I don't know, I feel like the creativity, you know, of being able to build an app, and, you know, these days, I can totally see why you'd want to work on a library. I've had times where I've I've thought it'd be cool to do like, I don't know, like some kind of GraphQL TensorFlow wrapper thing. Do you know what I mean?
Hell yeah, that'd be like fucking cool.
Fuck yeah, dude.
That'd be cool.
Fucking sweet. Yes, you're so I think the open source is great for a couple things. If you don't go, if you don't have a CS degree, if you're self-taught, if you're fill in the blank, you didn't go to the right blank, 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 blank. Your resume doesn't read the way it should. You didn't work at a big company. Open source is a fucking huge, huge opportunity for you to show off your skills.
Yeah, you could develop a personal brand, but I don't think you have problems with that.
You don't have that issue. So, but that being said too, you get to a point too where you're like, okay, once you've done that, now what? And now you don't even want to do it anymore because it's just like annoying.
What's funny is, dude, I still build shit, but I don't release it because I just don't want to deal with any of that.
Absolutely. I send it. You saw like even TSDX. I did some shit that was probably not great. I sent it to like 12 of my friends first.
Yeah.
We actually have an ad that we need to run. So we have sponsors for the show. And this week's sponsor is a company called Stream. And what's awesome about Stream is it helps you build real-time chat into your application as well as social networks really, really easily. So instead of doing your own newsfeed and whatnot, you can just use Stream SDKs. So yeah, check them out. Go to undefined.fm/stream. That's undefined.fm/stream and get a 25% off discount by going through that link. And if you want to just like show love and do cool stuff and love the podcast, you know, support the squad. So anyways, they just launched a new thing, their chat SDK, which is pretty tight. Like, I don't know if you ever built chat in your application. Ken, have you built chat UI?
Fuck yeah. Shit ton of times.
It sucks.
Yeah, it's the fucking worst.
You're like, oh, so you need sockets and you need the regular API.
Actually, no. Selection of anything is the worst, but chat is the second worst.
Okay, so chat is the second worst. Anyways, yeah. Stream helps you with chat. They just launched a new chat API. Check it out, undefined.fm/stream. And also
about WebSockets.
Oh, so basically with WebSockets? Yeah, so like if you build a chat UI, you have two problems. One is the immediate, like you have new messages coming in and out. And then you also have the problem of the motherfucker, your fucking user scrolls up and they want to see the history, right? So when they scroll up and they see the history, you need like a reverse chronological list of old messages. That can happen through regular REST or GraphQL. You know, that's pretty easy. Yeah. That's just the standard shit. Like, give me a list of all the messages in chronological order of this chat in reverse chronological order. The annoying and tricky thing is when you have you need sockets because you want to have real time updates for when somebody sends a new message, right? Because you don't have to refresh the page when a new message comes in. So you then have like a pub sub mechanism that you need to code and you need to come up with your own thing for not just new messages, but typing indicators. Maybe there are multiple people typing. Maybe, and then you want to do like, somebody wants to toss up an image or you want to expand a URL, right? You want to like fetch the open graph data and shit. Anyways, it becomes immediately quite complicated very quickly.
And then if shit comes in, right? Like if your history comes in, but there was a new message while the history was fetching, then reconciling the order of said feed, which is also fucking shenanigans.
Somebody goes down a subway and then they've lost, they're no longer on the network and they come back on the network and then you just like fucking
thread
that shit.
We actually wrote a WebSocket app like recently, just a bit of fun, but what it does is it basically, you join a chat room and it syncs your Spotify together, like syncs your Spotify streams. So we've only tested it with about like 10 people. The thing that's quite cool, so it has like chat as well, but you can leave it alone. Like, so if I basically connect to my girlfriend, to my wife, Jesus. Oh my God.
I do that too. I do that too.
So if I connect to my wife and then I go off like in the car, like it'll keep the server will keep running and keep everything in sync. So I'll just be listening to the music that she's listening within like maybe 100 milliseconds or something like that. You know
really?
I mean?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So robots can't dance.com.
I have a very similar thing where I just share the account with her. So she'll be sitting there with a lullaby for the baby, right? And I'll be like on my way to the airport, right? And then suddenly the baby's listening to OG Bobby Johnson.
My parents do that shit. My parents do that shit where like my mom will be up in I don't know, one of the houses being like cooking and listening to like, I don't know, she'd be like Christmas music or something like that. We're Jewish, but she likes Christmas music. Go figure. And my dad now will be driving up and will be like, put on Avicii.
Nice. Then she's in the kitchen just rocking out.
Whoa, yeah. And then she'll be like, put on Christmas music. And then our Spotify will. I learned the spot. You can only, so for a single Spotify account, there's only one stream at a time.
Yeah. You know what the absolute best is? When you have a Bluetooth speaker going in a party.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, you're connected to it. Then you go take a leak. Right. And you might like go look at like porno on your phone or something. And you're like, where's the sound? Where's it? Why can't I hear the sound on this? And then you realize that everybody at the party is listening.
Yeah. You got to watch out.
Dude, that was okay. Can I tell you the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to me? Also probably the best story ever.
Please.
Right, so I'm at Cornell and at Cornell, they're in the higher level economics classes. There are about 90 kids in every class. And this was in my money and credit class, which is about the banking system. And it's a 300 level class. So I know some of these people, you know, you don't really know everybody's name, but you kind of know all the faces and shit. Everybody kind of knows you. Anyways, it's a fucking regular ass Tuesday. Middle of the semester. Minding my own fucking business. Taking my own fucking notes. Show up to class. Doing my own thing. Sit down. I'm a little late, so I go to pull out my iPad, taking notes and Notability.
Oh no!
And classroom is full. All 90 kids are there. Just, you know, midterms in a couple weeks. Everybody's crunch time. Pull out my iPad. Could take some notes. And whatever porn I was fucking watching on my iPad
resumed
fucking blaring like real loud, like fucking full tilt, full volume. In the middle of class, And
so, what I want to know is how did you handle that?
So, at first, I was like, all right, I closed the iPad. And you know, like, of course, like fucking Steve Jobs built some shit that was just like, it's going to stay on because you lock the screen and you're going to keep playing the music. So I closed the iPad. It's still. And then I put it in my backpack and it's like. It's just like in the backpack.
Basically, your solution was to try and suffocate it.
Hide it. Completely hide it.
Wrap it in a hoodie.
It's fucking blaring, dude. And everybody around me knows what's going on. There's no doubt what's happening. Skid has got porn on his iPad and it's fucking blaring.
Oh, man.
And I put it there and I'm just waiting there and it's fucking 5-6 seconds go by and I'm looking around and of course I'm turning red, but also like kind of laughing like, hey, everybody does this. Whatever. I'm gonna get up now. So it's in my backpack. It's blaring, and I pick my backpack up, and I walk the fuck out of the room with the porn blaring in my backpack. And I walk out of class, and I didn't come back to class.
Go back to that class again.
Oh, I did. Did anybody call you on that after the fact?
Didn't
just think no, nobody ever spoke about switch. It, which means you know it was fucking embarrassing.
Wow.
Oh my God.
But you just didn't have any friends like me because I would have been like fucking my job back there. Fucking.
And it was pretty raunchy too. So that was good.
Jared's into the raunchy shit, folks.
The other embarrassing moment in college was we're in this big. I guess it was called networks. It was one of this like kind of in the psych, kind of in the computer science. It was taught by some dude who works at Google. Anyway, it's called networks. It's a lot of graph theory and stuff. It's a pretty interesting class, but it's like a 500 person lecture. And I'm in this 500 person like auditorium and my fraternity, I was pledging at the time to my fraternity. And so not only was I wearing a fucking fanny pack, that was a lavender fanny pack that I had to wear the entire semester. We'll just move past that part. We had to do one really embarrassing thing. And my like big brother like was like, Jared, you have to do something really embarrassing in a large class. And so what I ended up having to do was asked to go to the bathroom in the middle of like the pre-midterm lecture. So it's literally the day before the midterm. Everybody's like studying and like listening to this motherfucking teacher go over all, like review all the notes and shit. Mm. And there's 500 fucking like type A individuals in this class. And I literally interrupt and I go, excuse me. I put my hand up. Excuse me. Can I go to the bathroom? And he said, yeah. And I just got up and went to the bathroom in the middle of this 500 person lecture, interrupting wow. the midterm review.
You know, my most embarrassing college moment.
What? Oh, what?
When they didn't let me in. There's that.
So those are my two most embarrassing college moments.
I had a lot of like a lot of embarrassing like hometown party house moments.
Like what?
No, none of them. I mean, what was the most embarrassing? Wow, I don't know. I don't know. Just being coked out of my fucking mind, walking around naked and shit. I don't know.
Oh, craziness. Russia. Dude, are you speaking at any conferences anytime soon? Any other conferences for any other developer conferences?
I'm doing, I can't say what it is, but I'm doing something quite big, but it's not a developer conference. It's like a, you know, like a talk. I've got no idea what I'm going to talk about either, but I don't really, it's funny, you know, I was asked to do React Europe and I was so amped to be asked to do that. And it's great to just get to meet people like you, Jared, you know what I mean? And just get to kind of meet people and all the rest of it. But it's like, I don't really, you know, I'm not writing any libraries. I'm not writing any tools. So I think like for me, the thing that I find inspiring that I hope that maybe I can help to spread is just really this, just trying to, you know, erase the kind of stigma around coding and try and open people's minds up to the idea that in this day and age, it's like someone was saying to me the other day, like there'll be a time in the future where people will say to you, what did you learn at university? And you'll say, I learned like programming. And they'll be like, what do you mean? That's like going to university to learn to use a pen. Do you know?
Yeah, it's going to be mandatory.
Yeah. So, and I think that is so important at the moment. I did a poll on my Twitter the other day just to find out who follows me that has tried writing code before. And I think it was something like 25%. And I'm followed by a lot of like quite sort of techie kind of EDM people and codery people and stuff. So they're quite a technical audience. And it was still 25% of them had never used code before. Sorry, 75%. Wow. I've never used code before. And when you think that like every single person, including even my dad at this point, uses an iPhone, which is saying something, like, you know, we live our lives in this virtual world. And yet the majority of people are not interacting with it as creators. They're not bringing things into it. They're just using
consuming.
It. Consuming. And I think it's apart from anything else, it's actually dangerous. You know, to let the majority of the population not have an input into
or understand,
this world that we live in,
or understand how it even begins to work, right? Like,
and then they get
all scared when it's like, oh, it's being every keystroke, every click, everything is being stored in a database. It's like,
yeah, and then,
no shit, Sherlock.
Did you see when Congress interviewed Zuckerberg?
Yeah.
Fucking cringy that was.
Sir, we sell that. Mm-hmm.
How do you guys feel about are you guys on Zuckerberg's side or are you on whose side are you on with that?
I mean,
pretty political thing to ask.
Look,
should we change the subject?
No, this is important.
But, you know, so is Congress.
So let's be clear here. When you say Zuckerberg's side, are you on Mark as a person or like Facebook as an entity or like the people that we know that are our friends that work at Facebook? Because I know a lot of engineers and so does Ken that work at Facebook. They wake up every day and they do the best thing they can possibly do, right? They just get up and fucking crush shit. They don't give, they're not thinking about any of this shit. They're just doing their job.
So I went to go meet Dominic and Dan Abramov at Facebook the other day in London. And I posted a picture afterwards, and some woman came after me and she was like, "Fucking Facebook, what are you doing promoting Facebook?" And I answered her, because that's what I'm like, and this is probably why I've had a bad time with haters. But I answered her and I said, "Look, these guys are some of the most talented developers in the world. They're not involved in any politics. They're just writing amazing code." And she's like, "That's bullshit. They're in bed with Facebook." And I'm just like, wow. And I actually, do you remember when we had dinner, Jared, the guy from Facebook? I can't remember
Brandon,
his name.
Brandon Dale was the dinner with us.
Because I asked him that question as well. And you know, he was saying that at Facebook, because is there like 3 billion users? So like, is it 3 billion?
I think it's 3 billion. Two or three, yeah, something like that.
I mean, quite a fucking few.
A lot, however many it is, right?
A good portion.
So once in a million happens 3,000 times a day.
Yeah. Yeah. And one in a billion happens at least two or three times a day.
Yeah. Which is like, and I think, you know, I don't want to defend, like, it's horrible this world that we're in the moment. It's like, you can't even have a fucking opinion about anything. But like, I don't know the details. I don't know the ins and outs of it. And I'm definitely not defending Facebook. But what I would say is that, like, when you've got 3 billion users, I'd say that they're not doing too bad a job, considering how bad a job the American government fucking does.
It's a
logistical nightmare.
The other thing too is, to your point, is like, yeah, so if something happens 1 in a billion times, it happens like 2 times a day at Facebook. No other company has to operate under those conditions. No other
engineer. And it's the first time in history that something like that has existed. It's a totally new paradigm.
And then if you think about another company being in charge of it, are you so sure that they would do better?
This is what I mean. And I think, like, you know, with the Cambridge Analytica scandal, as much as no doubt they are largely responsible, if something's legal, people are always going to be pushing the edge of what's legal, right?
It was the Graph API. That shit was totally legal. It was under the grounds of the Graph API. You could totally do any shit like that. It was just totally allowed.
And it feels to me like the government is who should be taking responsibility for
our
privacy.
But they're completely incompetent when it comes to understanding the nuances of that. And that's the problem, right? Because they don't understand the nuances of it. But I also stand by the fact that I don't think anybody goes to Facebook to work every day and is like, "I'm going to do evil shit." Like, no, that's not how that works. This is not how it works. No one wakes up and does that. Right.
But I mean, you can see why people could say, look, if you can say that what they're doing is wrong. And that, I think, is a big if, because I would argue that it's wrong if it's illegal. And I think the government should make it illegal. I think the government should have much more stringent control over the way that people use data. There's no fucking doubt. But at that point in time, they were on the front line and it wasn't illegal to do what they were doing. And I think that, like...
Dude, Pablo Escobar, when he was running drugs, when it was before cocaine was legal, it was totally legal, right? Like, it's like... Yeah.
Also, they've explicitly agreed to this shit as terms of sign up.
Correct, too. And also, by the way, when they go to regulate Facebook, they're going to fuck it up. And actually, they're going to cement Facebook's position into... they're going to cement it when they do it. Because when they go to regulate them, they'll basically prevent anything from using the same tactics that Facebook used to gain its size. Therefore, basically building a gigantic moat around Facebook. So if you're Facebook, you're like, come on, please regulate me. Have at it. It'll basically, same thing with the, you know, look at the American banks. JPMorgan Chase has doubled in size since the financial crisis. Since the Volcker Rule was in place, since it became a structurally important financial institution, the assets have ballooned. Now when you go to regulate something, you're going to build a moat around it, and you're going to prevent things that would be possibly competitive with that thing from using the same growth tactics that thing used. And I think that's where we're going to get you're going to end up cementing Facebook's position forever. If you go to regulate it,
I do think it would be brilliant if, whether it's organic or because of regulation, if the internet would eventually move towards, lots of much smaller tailored services. I think that the era that we live in at the moment, where our whole lives are wrapped up in three or four apps. I just don't think that's healthy.
Yeah, no, it's bad. You know? Also, it's
I think
it's
our lives hard. Being wrapped up in apps at all is not healthy.
Not good. Not good. The other thing too is it has wide-ranging impact across so many aspects of our lives too, like for as just developers, right? You have it when the web is consolidated into three or four apps, or just people's, you know, time on their phones or devices in three or four apps, their expectations for user experience is just fucking sky high.
Yeah. It's like if you come in as a new app, how the fuck are you supposed to compete with it?
Because they have thousands of developers optimizing every fucking pixel, right? This thing, what if we move it over one pixel to the left, one pixel to the right, right? And it's just so optimized, and they're running thousands of A/B tests and doing crazy experiments, and you're just some little fucking app trying to make a buck, right? And then the consumers expect, because they spend so much time in these apps, that your shit is from day one going to be as good. And I think that is beneficial to the people on this podcast, because if you listen to this podcast, you're going to get paid to build that app. But sure, fuck, are. Man. Fuck. Fuck. Anyways, yeah, let's go on to picks. Crazy. Picks of the week. Favorite shit, shout outs, call outs, whatever. Favorite products, things, libraries, tools, etc. Kenneth.
You're up, Jared.
Oh, I'm up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give a shout out to the all new Undefined podcast store,
which is the shit, might I add.
shop.undefined.fm. if you have not frequented, you should frequent. We got some t-shirts, and we got nobody has purchased. Actually, there's one specific pick, I will say, the Kenneth Bling necklace, or the Kenny Bling necklace. It's been changed. we have a necklace on the store that is just says Kenny on it, and it's fire, and no one's bought it yet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like it's not like personalized, it's just Kenny.
It's a sterling silver pendant.
Whoever buys that, I mean, it's like a done deal, right?
Seriously, the first person who buys the Kenny Bling necklace will get a shout out. We may even bring you on the podcast, honestly, at this point. Fire.
If fire. Like, Ken, if somebody brought that, one of the guys who left you one of these crazy issues, like brought that necklace, would you fix that issue for them?
Fuck.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
I renamed the library tits.
You
for
guys
this.
Should start doing that. When people leave an issue, you should just be like, here's a link to this t-shirt. Buy the t-shirt, send me the receipt, and I'll fix the issue.
Post a picture of yourself wearing it shit to Twitter. And
oh my God. Dude, I ordered a bunch of samples, so I may have to do that.
Nice.
Nice. All right, Ken?
Oh, my pick is going to be the Wall Township, New Jersey, Cumberland Farms. And I'll tell you why.
Is there Wawa in New Jersey?
Yeah.
Wawa fucks.
Yeah.
Cumberland Farms is good, though.
I'm talking about this specific Cumberland Farms, and I'll tell you
just
why.
Just this one Cumberland Farms?
Just this one specific Cumberland Farms, and that's because they sell mango jewel pods. Not the ripoff ones.
Not the real shit. There. The real deal, Holyfield.
I can get real deal mango jewel pods for 40 for two.
Wow. You're an addict, bro.
Wow.
What is a manual? What? I didn't just say that again. What is it?
All right. So
I'm from England as well.
It's like a little electronic cigarette thing. You've seen these, right?
Oh, shit. Okay. Right. I think you guys are like a couple of years ahead of us with that kind of tech.
Yeah. Ken's an addict. Ken's an addict.
Yeah. Yeah. So this right here is mango, the best flavor. And the government said that they're not allowed to sell them in like stores anymore.
Because they sell the kids and shit, and they can't have like fruity flavors and stuff.
Yeah. But this spot fucking keeps some shit under the counter for your boy.
Some black market shit.
Mm-hmm. So I'm real fucking excited about that.
So Ken went ahead and mentioned it on the podcast. Real smart.
Okay, well, my pick.
Nice.
Nice.
Nice. So my pick is actually a device. It's called a Remarkable. Have you guys heard of that?
No.
Right, this is the coolest fucking shit that I have ever used. I promise you. It's like, so it's basically like a Kindle that you can write on.
What?
It's about 5 mil thick. It's A4 size. and you can download books, you can download papers, you can annotate things, you can draw, you can basically paint on it. So the adverts for it show people painting something that looks like something you would like paint with, you know, like charcoal or something, not paint, but draw with charcoal. I mean, I use them because I like reading papers because I'm a complete dweeb. And I can annotate the papers and save all my notes on there and stuff. So I'm bigging up Remarkable. Gets my vote. Big up.
This thing looks fucking sick.
Dude, that looks pretty sweet.
It's so dope, man. It's the best thing. It's quite expensive though. Like, it's probably twice as expensive as it should be, but it's really good.
I'm going to have to cop one of these now.
That's pretty tight.
Yeah, you won't regret it.
That's fucking dang.
What? This reminds me of the thing LiveScribe. I used to use this thing.
Oh yeah, they have like there's a way that you can SSH into it and you can use it as a terminal. This is like a Kindle terminal.
Yeah. What the fuck?
And it's all e-ink, right? It's like not a color screen.
Yeah. It's like e-ink.
Dude, that's so
cool. You like use it outside and stuff.
That is pretty dank.
All right. Well, if you work at Remarkable and you want to come to this podcast, you can come to this podcast.
Yeah. Say the word.
Say the word. Dude, Dan. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. Dude.
No, it's been great to hang. Let me know when you guys are in London. Let's definitely link up. That'd be fun.
Dude, end of October.
Pints.
Liters.
Well, come on. If you want to, how long are you actually here for? How long are you in the UK for?
Ken, how long are you going?
I'm going for a while. I'm going to go to France first. I'm bringing my family. We're going to go to Paris for like a week, and then we're going to go to England for a week.
Look at you, motherfucker.
Well, if you guys want to drop by my place up here, I'm about half an hour from Heathrow, probably sort of 40 minutes from London. And super nice out here. We got the studios and stuff like that. It's like,
Ken, you should record
fields.
A track.
It's really pretty.
Make some beats.
Hell
Ken,
yeah.
If you can get me to go in the studio, there's a lot of people that will give you a pat on the back. Seriously, like, there'll be like an army of people that'll be like, dude, nice fucking work. Because I don't know what is wrong with me, but I just can't even go in there at the moment. I don't know why.
Oh man, we're gonna have so much fun.
All right,
yeah,
let's
do it.
Yeah, all right, Dan. Cool. How can people follow you, Dan?
So I'm on Twitter as DJ Fresh UK. And I'm on everything as DJ Fresh UK.
Cool.
And I'm on GitHub as happy-machine, but I have like no open source shit at all.
Well, so follow happy-machine.
But just
can you make a repo so I can file an issue on it?
Yeah, exactly. We're just going to make some shit on your repo.
Yeah, like I only have it there for people to file issues, like angry issues, just to remind me of my music past. So like if there's any haters out there, there's any haters out there that have missed me on YouTube, you can find me on GitHub.
That's epic. All right, folks. Well, thanks for listening. This has been an episode of the Undefined Podcast. I'm Jared Palmer.
And I'm Ken Wheeler. And as always, fuck you guys.
And we'll see you next week.